the Mandalay Bay. I stand at Mandalay Bay halfway up. I see the shots coming from Mandalay Bay. We have multiple casualties.
We're angry. We're grieving. We're confused. People are hurting.
He brutally murdered more than 50 people and wounded hundreds more. It was an act of pure evil.
Welcome back to this special edition of the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141, Massacre in Las Vegas. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Unspeakable horror, shock, and grief tonight as Las Vegas and the nation reels from last night's mass shooting. Tonight, we'll examine some of the issues and try to provide some perspective. My guests are Dr. Tyrone Powers, Director of the Homeland Security and Criminal Justice Institute, Andrew Woods, gun reform policy expert and chairman of Liberty Partners Group. We'll also have Dr. Nicole Cutts, clinical psychologist. Lines are open if you have a comment, if you have a question about the massacre in Las Vegas. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Dr. Powers, let me first go to you. Are you surprised at how this incident took place, and what do you find unusual about it when compared to the last handful of mass shootings in America? Dr. Powers, can you hear me? Dr. Powers? Do we have Dr. Powers? Okay. Okay, let me go to Mr. Woods. Mr. Woods, D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser made a comment today when she was asked about the shooting and gun regulations here in America. She said that Congress has done virtually nothing. Would you agree with that?
Well, it's been very disappointing that Congress has done very little over the last 8 years. President Obama addressed the nation on 14 different occasions in the aftermath of 14 different mass shootings, six in his last year in office, including the very tragic events in Newtown, Connecticut with Sandy Hook Elementary School, where young children were murdered. We see polls that show that well over 90% of the American people support background checks. And yet when the president and members of Congress tried to get legislation passed on background checks, it didn't go anywhere. We've seen efforts to try and keep people on the no-fly list from being able to buy handguns or any guns of any kind. That isn't successful. So the mayor and I think officials throughout the country have every right to be disgusted with the lack of activity on the part of the Congress in moving forward on any meaningful legislation, particularly in the last 8 years and in the 14 times that the President Obama had to address the country, as I mentioned.
We do have Dr. Powers now on the line. Dr. Powers, are you there?
Yes, sir.
Thank you so much for joining me. I wanted to ask you, are you surprised at this particular incident, considering what we know about the shooter now, and particularly when so far, there just doesn't seem to be any rhyme or reason or connection to political affiliation, white supremacy, or anything at all.
Yeah, it's a unique situation in a number of ways. First of all, he's 64 years of age. Most of these incidents historically occur with individuals from anywhere from around 21 or 24 to 34. So it's a unique situation from that particular standpoint, and the fact that we don't have any connection immediately to any particular group. However, I will say this, the investigation continues because the agencies and certainly the FBI believe that there has to be someone who knew of some thoughts or some conversation that he had along these particular lines, even with his brother denying that there was any association. That investigation will be thorough, and there will be a thorough investigation of anyone he may have in contact with to have semi-automatic weapons turned into automatic weapons or to buy automatic weapons once they get through looking through the 17 to 18 guns that he had in his possession.
There have been discussions today about the shooter in this case not necessarily snapping, that this was well thought out. He had been in the hotel since Thursday. He had at least 10 rifles in the room. Your thoughts about that? Dr. Powers, can you hear me? We're going to have our team try to get that technical issue squared away. I guess, you know, Mr. Woods, the thing that I find really fascinating about this, and you know very well, you were intimately involved with the Sandy Hook situation, is that there were children involved with that, and yet there was no movement by, you know, our federal lawmakers. Is this the incident that could very well move this forward? Or based on your experience, is it just not going to matter and that will there just be too short a memory?
Well, I had thought that in December of 2012, when 20 children ages 5 to 8 were massacred, that might be a tipping point where Americans put such pressure on Congress to come forward with some sort of legislation, be it background checks or anything else, that the sight of murdered schoolchildren would be enough. Maybe a massacre of this magnitude, where a gunman stands on a hotel balcony or a hotel window and uses semi-automatic, at least, rifles to murder close to 60 people and wound 500, where these poor people are, just sitting targets, will be a tipping point. What's going to be interesting will be to see how President Trump decides to use this moment where he really is being the consoler-in-chief, the comforter-in-chief for the very first time. President Obama had to deal with it, as I mentioned earlier, with Sandy Hook and on 13 other occasions. President Bush, 43, and 9/11. President Clinton in the Oklahoma City bombings. These are moments that truly transform one from a candidate to a president. And President Trump today eloquently called for a time of unity. And he echoed a refrain, Harold, from a speech that he gave to the Congress in February, where he said every American child should be able to grow up in a safe community. You know, the president recently worked with Democrats on a budget bill, a 3-month extension to keep the government open. That irritated some of his Republican colleagues in the Congress. President Trump may now have an opportunity to work with the Congress and reach across the aisles to try and address the specific instance of this shooting. We don't know yet, but it seems that the evidence indicates that this gunman, Mr. Paddock, converted some of his rifles from semi-automatic rifles to automatic rifles. And your listeners may know that automatic rifles in this country have been banned, prohibited since 1986. But the irony is anyone can go out and buy a $50 converter kit and convert a semi-automatic rifle into an automatic rifle and shoot off these rounds with such velocity that a bullet out of an automatic gun, an AK-47, things that we see in the movies, will rip through a policeman's vest, kill that policeman, and the bullet can come out the other end and kill somebody else behind that policeman. So the issue the president has is perhaps he can work with the Congress to say, we need to do something about the legality of these kits. Why is it that we have guns that are banned, which did achieve bipartisan support when that ban was enacted in 86.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about the massacre in Las Vegas. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call. Lines are open. Ronald calling from Silver Spring. Thanks for calling, Ronald. What's on your mind?
Hey, good evening. I just have a, my heart and soul goes out to the victims in Las Vegas, but I do have a correction. As horrific as that was, and it was horrific, but in they're saying that it's the greatest massacre in U.S. history, and that's incorrect. The greatest massacre happened May 31st, 1921, in Greenwood, Oklahoma, right next outside of Tulsa. Black Wall Street is what it's called. And in that, over 300 people were shot, killed, and bombed, and they just happened to be black people. And if you don't understand it, please research it. Open it up to your listeners, and that's when, instead of 59, it was over 300.
And let me say, Ronald, I'm certainly very, very aware of the Greenwood Massacre. I think in, you know, within the context of this conversation, the race-based massacre in Greenwood was not one individual. That was several, from Sandy Hook to Virginia Tech, to what has happened here, that we're talking about one individual. But your point is certainly well noted, and thank you so much. I need to take a break. When we come back, more of this conversation, including some mental health analysis. What are the possibilities? What are the issues behind this massacre in Las Vegas? We're going to talk to Kendall. We're going to talk to Tony and also Dr. Nicole Cutts. She's up next. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Stay with us. Do not hang up. You will be able to hear the program. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on 96.3 WHUR. We'll be back in just a few seconds. Welcome back to this special edition of The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our discussion about the massacre in Las Vegas. My guests are Andrew Woods. He is a gun reform policy expert. He is also chairman of Liberty Partners Group. We also have Dr. Nicole Cutts, a clinical psychologist. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let me go back to the phone lines real quick. Kendall calling from Fort Washington. Kendall, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, thank you for that, having me on here.
Sure.
First of all, my condolences to the family or everybody that's involved with this. It's a horrible tragedy. Some background as far as this issue. We have a serious mental health issue. It goes back to when the Reagan administration defunded public mental health. If you know, it's a direct correlation since that time. The mass shootings from that time has increased since that time. Since 1999, over 200 people have been killed, and it's increasing. And that's something we really need to address. Mm-hmm.
Dr. Cutts, your thoughts about what Kendall is sharing with us?
Well, I think that what Kendall has shared is true, that there's been an uptick in incidents of gun violence, and I don't think that we can pin it completely on mental illness. And, you know, it's also there are people like Mr. Paddock who did this shooting that, you know, didn't have a history of violence and mental illness. I really think that, you know, it has more to do with the availability of guns, people's ability to have guns that they can use and that people are not properly screened. So mental health is an issue, but I would hardly say it is the leading cause of gun violence or horrific massacres like the one that we just saw.
Kendall, thank you so much for sharing with us. And that brings me to another point, Mr. Woods, because unlike in the Sandy Hook situation, where, you know, the perpetrator of that shooting had a severe and long history of mental health issues. We are hearing reports as it relates to Stephen Paddock that there were no issues, background checks and the like. So for gun reform advocates such as yourself, what is the argument when someone like a Stephen Paddock, at least at this point, doesn't seem to be an extremist, does not have a criminal record, from all intents and purposes is a law-abiding citizen, no political affiliation, no religious extremism, maybe a parking ticket. Mm. What's your argument for reform on that?
Well, Harold, it's really addressing gun violence is almost like addressing terrorism. We're all asked as citizens now to be alert and to watch things around us. And when we see something that seems abnormal, to report it. You know, our states do a wonderful job when there's child abuse of creating 800 numbers. Maryland has this. So that if you suspect that your neighbor is abusing his or her child, there's an 800 number where you can call anonymously and give a tip. One of the things that we need to do as citizens is to use the same diligent efforts in reporting individuals that we think might be prone to commit violence. Statistics now tell us that over 70% of the people who are going to either harm themselves or harm others broadcast it on social media. And what do we do about it? The folks in Newtown knew that the young man involved in that shooting was at the least peculiar. The folks in Charleston, South Carolina, knew that the shooter there had racist views and didn't hesitate to promote those and publicly espouse them. But people did nothing. So, yes, the police have a burden. Yes, we can have stricter gun control laws. But we have to be in a position where we're reporting things that appear to be dangerous to others.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Tony calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Tony. What's on your mind?
Really, I just want to touch on the situation that we are in nowadays.
Please,
where
go right ahead.
People look at gun violence one-sided. I mean, you have a lot of things that happen in Chicago's and different areas where it looked more towards the black community. But in this situation that we are in, even though it is tragic, the Sandy Hook situation and even with the Las Vegas situation was something that was done on a Caucasian side. And it's not to be a race thing at all, but people have more access to weapons than other people. And in certain communities, things happen. So in this situation, how do you look past it? This is Las Vegas, where people come from all over to have a good time, to, you know, be with friends or to, you know, enjoy themselves. And at a big open event, this was an event where a lot of people were injured and hurt and died as a result of one person with an automatic weapon. This is something that needs to be looked at as far as how do you come into a hotel room with over a large number of weapons? You didn't have one or two. You had multiple weapons, and you caused heartache to a lot of people, and you've killed a lot of people.
So I'm trying to understand your point, Tony, because you talked about the issue of race, but then you talked about Mr. Paddock's ability to get these weapons into the hotel. And certainly, I'm not saying that your argument about race is not valid, but also there's an issue about geography. And I think that Mr. Woods could even speak to that. Let me try to clarify. You know, depending on where you live, Mr. Woods, how you see guns is often very, very different. If you live in South Dakota, you may look at this incident differently than if you live on the south side of Chicago. Can you provide a little bit of clarity with that kind of argument about the difficulty of gun reform?
Oh, sure. I grew up in the south in Tennessee and went to school in North Carolina. Now
there
I live in Baltimore.
Yeah.
And the viewpoints on gun ownership are very, very different between your your urban areas and your rural areas. Guns aren't going to go away. The lobby groups are too powerful. We're going to have smarter gun use. We're going to have, what I mean by that is we're going to have a policy led by the administration and by the Congress where background checks, which again, 90% of the people of this country support, do become law so that we can try and figure out who is buying guns and should they be. But you're not going to do away with any guns, whether you live in you know, Chicago, Baltimore, or Durham, North Carolina.
Tony, thank you so much for sharing. I want to go back to Dr. Cutts for a moment, because Dr. Cutts, if you could talk to me a little bit about what a lot of people have heard today and even debated about Stephen Paddock snapping. But obviously not a technical term. But can you give us some insight on what people may mean by that, particularly since obviously this was planned? He's been at the hotel since Thursday. The shooting happened on Sunday. So we're talking Friday, Saturday, Sunday, three nights mm-hmm. before this happened. What kind of issue could possibly push a man to do something like this? Is it anger? Is it a lack of control? Talk to me about that.
Well, you know, with knowing very little about his circumstances or, you know, what was going on with him, definitely the possibility of somebody snapping if pressure is building up in their lives. If he's an angry person, you know, who has stressors on top of stressors. But I don't think when mentally healthy people snap, their first reaction is to shoot a bunch of people. So obviously there's something more going on with him than just that. You know, but again, knowing so little, I've been trying to imagine scenarios. He might have been delusional in some way. He might have, we probably will find out that he had some kind of an agenda that maybe he just wasn't making public. You know, he might have been delusional in thinking that he was doing something righteous in some way. And maybe he is angry. I mean, a lot of people are angry right now and under a lot of pressure. But, you know, it's one thing to be angry and lose control. And obviously there's some kind of mental illness going on with this man. And then for him to do that and commit suicide, obviously something was wrong. I think, you know, time and maybe an investigation will reveal what that was. But, you know, it's just too hard to say specifics at this point.
I'm sure you heard comments by his brother
mm-hmm. yeah.
today where he said, you know, the last time he heard from him was in a text after Hurricane Irma. He was asking about the welfare of their mother. Well, Hurricane Irma was weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
That would suggest to me that perhaps he and his brother were not
that close.
Is it possible that family members can miss things when they aren't close to members who commit horrendous acts like this?
Yeah, definitely. You know, again, not knowing what his social history was like. You know, did he have social supports? Did he have any close friends? So far, we've heard from this brother, and we've heard about this girlfriend that he had. I don't think we've had any comments from any other close friends, so I don't know what his social support was like, which when you don't have social support, that can lead to poor mental health. You know, we also know that his father was a criminal. His father was on the FBI's most wanted list several years ago for being a bank robber. You know, I don't know what kind of impact that had on this gentleman. So there's, again, there's so much that we don't know, but, you know, like you said, for his brother to have only, you know, heard from him so long ago, he might not have a close social support network.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about the massacre in Las Vegas. Let's go to Jimmy. Jimmy calling from Virginia. Thanks for calling, Jimmy. What's on your mind?
Yes, I mean, this is a difficult situation. Nobody wins. There's a bunch of people who have lost a lot of lives. But the problem that I'm hearing is, you know, a lot of there's some misinformation. Automatic weapons are not completely illegal. they're highly, highly licensed, and so are silencers. And as far as AK-47s, they don't go through bulletproof vests. They are designed to stay inside and wreck a human body. So continuing with some misinformation magnifies some of the other issues. A weapon, the gun that was purchased or the guns that were purchased, could easily fit in a very large trunk. I mean, bringing in 18 weapons is surprising, but it's not completely unbelievable. If you brought in an M1 Abrams tank, that would be something else. But honestly, automatic weapons are not that hard to come by. You can get a license for them. And it's not impossible. So, yeah, yes, background checks are a good thing. But law-abiding citizens wouldn't mind a background check.
Let me, Jimmy, stop you there without getting too much into the weeds. And hopefully, and I think we may have lost him, unfortunately. Let's talk a little bit about caliber. I know I'm not a gun owner, but I do know something about weapons. You are familiar with the caliber weapons and the like somewhat, Mr.
Sure.
Woods. So police are reporting that there were calibers of .223 and .308 that were found, as opposed to a 9 or even a 10 millimeter, which is standard issue for police officers. Can you talk briefly about the difference between a .223 or .308 round and what police are usually dealing with, and why, as you said earlier, those rounds are much more or differently dangerous?
Oh, well, the kinds of calibers that Mr. Paddock had do grievous harms to an individual. The 9mm standard issue semi-automatic handguns that officers have are no match for what Mr. Paddock had last night. I mean, it would be like me going up against somebody with a gun and I've got basically a spitball that I'm trying to fight back with. So make no mistake about it, Mr. Paddock had the wherewithal to understand exactly what he was going to do when he went into that hotel room to shoot. The intent that he exhibited throughout his actions with the kinds of bullets that he brought up there, the number of rounds. It's now up to 20 rifles, as I looked just and checked the news for a moment. And there is a question as to whether or not two of those are automatic. That was being suggested by an FBI agent off the record out in Las Vegas. So this guy knew what he was doing, and he used the equipment to kill people.
One of the things, as we go to break, that I heard today was that what police have, which are your standard issue, your 9mm, are meant, they call them man stoppers. They're meant to stop someone, as opposed to a .223 or .308, which are weapons of war.
Exactly.
And they are meant to do much more damage to many people at a distance, which is, of course, unfortunately, what we saw here. We're going to take a break. When we come back, more with Dr. Cutts, as well as Mr. Woods. We're talking about the massacre in Las Vegas. We'll be back in just a moment.
I was 11.
Welcome back to this special edition of the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our discussion about the massacre in Las Vegas. Let me go back to the phone lines. Rick calling from Brooklyn, New York. Rick, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Love your show.
Thank you so much.
And I'm picking it up over XM.
It's
fascinating whenever you have a black or a foreign dark person. They're always evil. They always have an agenda. They're always violent and thugs. But whenever it's a white male, there's some mental issue. In other words, what they're saying is, if he was in his right mind, he's morally incapable of doing something that wrong. But you never hear mention when someone black is alleged to commit a violent crime that there's something psychologically wrong. And we can draw a lot from the victims in this case. I don't know why it's not being mentioned, but we know that overwhelmingly the people who go to these country music shows are Southern, they're white, they're conservative, they're pro-gun, they're typically Republicans. And people, if this was a group of 500 black people, we would be drawing many conclusions. But for some reason, because they're white, we're not allowed to draw a conclusion. It's insane, and the press is so biased. This is a terrorist act. Why isn't it being called a terrorist? Anytime somebody white does something, it's an incident.
Well, Rick, let me say I think you have a valid point. To be fair, the president did call this evil, although certainly we would not necessarily say the president is an expert on this. However, certainly I think that no one has officially has called this domestic terrorism, although certainly it smacks of all of the things related to, you know, domestic, you know, terrorism. And I think that that certainly remains to be seen, and we will be watching to find out what officials have to say about this and what they say. I know Dr. Cutts would probably argue that anyone, even if this is a political issue, that that there still has to be a mental health issue, no matter what their skin color. Dr. Cutts, I won't speak for you. Your thoughts?
Well, I agree with you, Harold, and I'm also thinking about not too long ago we were on the air talking about the Facebook killer, who was an African-American man, and we were definitely talking about his mental health and, you know, that he was clearly had mental health issues. He was not called a thug, you know. And as for the caller's point about the concert goers were not the people who caused this violence. It was Mr. Paddock. I also agree with the caller that there's definitely a racial bias in this country when it comes to most everything. But I don't think that he said it in absolutes, and it's not really absolute, but there is definitely a bias, yes.
Rick, thank you so much for listening. I appreciate your input. One of the things that occurred to me, Mr. Woods, and I'll be very, very interested in hearing from Majority Whip Steve Scalise, because he returned to Capitol Hill yesterday on crutches after almost dying in a mass shooting incident. The irony is not lost on me. Your thoughts about that?
No, I was thinking the same thing today. I mean, Mr. Scalise would have bled to death, but for the fact that, you know, he received the right kind of care from a fellow congressman who'd been had military training and was in effect like a paramedic. I think that the leadership of the House is going to come under tremendous pressure now, after yet another mass shooting, to take up some sort of legislation. Leader Pelosi today called for a commission on gun violence, sent a letter to the Speaker. And right before we went on the air, I don't know if the Speaker's responded yet, but he will. Again, you heard the president's remarks today. I was not a Trump supporter, but I was struck by him having to face this moment as being, as I said earlier, a comforter in chief. It's a unique political opportunity that he has to try and reach across the aisle and do something along the lines that I was speaking of earlier with these semi-automatic converter kits. If Trump were to do that, you know, it could be his moment where he really bucks the trend in D.C. and works with Democrats and Republicans who care about gun issues, gun violence, to try and take one small step in the direction of doing other things that won't take away people's rights to bear arms under the Second Amendment, but will promote some smart policies that'll try and keep guns away from people who should have no business getting them.
Throughout the course of this conversation, we've made reference to your involvement with the Sandy Hook incident. What specifically was your connection to that?
Sure. I had the privilege of working with the parents of Sandy Hook Elementary School, who formed Sandy Hook Promise. Right after the shooting, a mom and a dad who each lost a child at Sandy Hook came to my office. I was expecting to find very angry people who wanted to get involved in some left-wing gun control lobby, and that's not what I found. Indeed, they came in and they said they wanted to work on the premise that anybody who would go into a school or a McDonald's or a movie theater or now stand at a window in a hotel and shoot people absolutely has to have mental health problems. And Sandy Hook Promise is all about identifying those individuals who are likely to have issues that could cause them to snap. Again, 70% of all people who are going to do harm to themselves or others broadcast it on social media. And what the Sandy Hook parents tried to do was to come up with demonstration projects in Columbus, Ohio, and in Florida and some other cities, where clergy and teachers and principals and next-door neighbors all learn what you look for in an individual who might be socially isolated or tend to have violent tendencies, that you think that individual could cause harm to somebody. And if they're out there broadcasting that they would on social media, you do something about it. These people who lost their children couldn't sit by and not try and stop this from happening to somebody else. And while I grieve for the folks in Las Vegas today and all the families that have impacted lost folks or have people who are hurt, the people who've lived through Sandy Hook or Charleston or San Bernardino, this day brings up all of those horrible memories for them, and it's like they relive it all over again.
Dr. Kutz, I'm sure you heard what Mr. Woods just said. How do you balance that kind of sympathetic, dare I say empathetic concern with the thing that we often talk about centered around the stigma of mental health? You could have someone who may be socially isolated, but you also may have someone who just likes to be alone. It may not be considered the norm, but that person may not be dangerous. How do you create that balance?
Well, I think that people, how do you create the balance? I mean, there's a difference between somebody who just likes to be alone and somebody who's socially isolated, along with showing other signs of mental illness. So I think that we need to, you know, drop this stigma thing of mental illness. It is an actual illness. People have these many different mental illnesses, right? We need to drop the stigma. We need to look at it like any other illness. People need to educate themselves about the symptoms of mental illness, and they need to educate themselves about what they can do about that. And I think it starts with the individuals. It starts in our homes. It starts in our schools. You know, the way we talk about mental illness, I think that the stigma is lessening, but I think each of us as individuals can probably do something by at least maybe starting with education. You know, what if you know somebody has depression or they're bipolar? You know, what does that mean? What does that look like? There are a lot of people who are out here and they're well-functioning and they have diagnosable mental illnesses. So I think the first thing, like I mentioned, is to really get past that stigma so that people can get the help that they need and so we can help each other.
Mm-hmm. Final question for you, Mr. Woods. Considering what has happened today, people are going to go to concerts this weekend. They're going to go to dinner. They're going to go to the movies. They are going to go to family gatherings. Should we, prior to this and even after this, begin to look at the world differently, that every time we go to a large gathering, in addition to looking and having fun, that we need to think that maybe something like this could happen again?
Well, I think it behooves all of us to try and be smart and aware of our surroundings. We made the analogy to terrorism before and looking at things that look out of order or would cause you to believe that that individual might be intending to cause harm to others. That's just the society in which we now live. For anybody who's traveled to Israel, there's a completely different kind of security that's used in that country where individual freedoms are still promoted, but people who live under constant fear of being attacked look at the world differently. So I'm afraid that's happened in the United States as well.
I want to thank you for coming in, Andrew Woods, and sharing your expertise with us. Also, Dr. Nicole Kutz, it's always an honor to have you on the program. And also, we want to thank Dr. Tyrone Powers for sharing his expertise with us today as well. That is The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141 for this Monday, October 2nd. I'm Harold Fisher. You can certainly tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Now, stay tuned for The Connection with Lorna Newton. Good night. Be safe.